you see all these cuts and you wonder, how are we supposed to manage? And it ends up that a lot of teachers spend out of their own pocket to make up for it.
If we had not balanced the budget this year and actually begin to generate a surplus to put towards that decline in revenue when that 1 cent sales tax goes away, you would have seen significant budget reductions across the board that I don't even want to think about.
Teacher Sandy Schiffman and State Senator Frank Antonori are both talking about the state budget, and their animosity frames the debate. I'm Christopher Conover.
And I'm Andrea Kelly. The plan for the new fiscal year brings up plenty of emotion. Over the next half hour, we'll explore not only the arguments, but also the reasoning and the effects here in Southern Arizona.
The budget for the new fiscal year goes into effect July 1st. But unlike years past, the legislature did not wait until the last minute to pass a spending plan for the fiscal year. Both the House and Senate passed the budget in April. In all, the budget has a little more than $1 billion in cuts. Before we get into the effects of those cuts, let's begin with an explanation from two Southern Arizona Republicans who helped craft the budget and strongly believe in the spending plan. State Senators Frank Antonori and Al Melvin recently sat down with us in the studio to talk about the budget. Senator Antonori began by explaining why cuts were needed.
We got to this position because we had a legislature and a governor in the past years that spent more money than the state had and expanded government to where now we have the new normal, as they call it, in this economy, where we have a certain amount of money that comes into the state. And the Constitution of the state requires that we live within our means and balance the budget based on revenue. So one of the things we did this year was to make sure that there were no more gimmicks and no more tricks and that we were going to structurally balance the budget. So that was what the main crux was going in, to make sure we balanced the budget this year.
And I would say that it took us 90 years as a state to get to a general fund budget of about $6.3 billion. But under the previous governor, in less than 5 years, it was doubled to about 13. And there's a big feeling on our side at the legislature that we don't want to be engaged in generational theft, meaning that we're not going to borrow from generations that aren't born yet to pay for current costs. We're just not going to do it.
On the issue of taxes and taxpayers, people often bring up tax loopholes or credits to corporations, and they bring it up in the revenue sense. If those other revenues were coming in, if some of those loopholes were closed, then maybe there wouldn't have had to be as many cuts. Can you respond to that?
We have a problem, I believe, now where a lot of the folks out there don't understand basic economics. Businesses really, they'll write a check to the government that they are saying is their taxes, but they immediately turn it around and build it into the cost of their products and services. So the end consumer actually pays the tax. So when you hear about closing loopholes on businesses, what you're really hearing is raise taxes on businesses, which will then result in increased prices for services and goods. That ends up hurting our economy. I'll tell you why, because when you're competing with Mexico and China and India and trying to get our products into their markets, if the businesses in this country have to add their tax burden into those costs of those products, it makes our products unobtainable with regards to revenue that people make in those countries. We have to keep the price of our products low. In the end, everybody pays. Whether you're paying it when you buy a vehicle from a car dealer, you pay that car dealer's taxes. We wanted a flat tax last year. That is the fairest way to go about making sure it's equal. You get rid of all those loopholes. Everybody pays a flat rate across the board. You don't pit the rich versus poor and the private sector versus the public sector. Everybody chips in the same and pays the same amount based on the services and the revenue they generate from their personal income for the services that they receive in the state. And that's the best way to do it. And that solves that problem. It goes away. Flat tax across the board.
And we put together a jobs package this last session where we're going to lower the corporate income tax from 7 to 4.9. It'll be fully in place by 2017. We're going to be lowering this onerous business personal property tax. And we're hoping to raise some private money to put some billboards on the Arizona-California line saying, hey, we're open for business, bring your companies and jobs with you. And some of those companies have already moved here.
Yeah. The anti-business mantra has got to stop. You can't be saying, you know, stick it to the business, stick it to the business, and then say, well, I want a job, okay? Because those businesses are going to leave. They're going to go to India. They're going to go to Mexico. They're going to go to China. We've got to make it profitable, and it's about profit. Let's be honest. People don't go into business to lose money or break even. They go into business to make money, and they will find a place somewhere on this planet, in some country, where they will be able to do that. I want them to do it here in Arizona.
Yes, there's a large pot of money. But it's restricted on how it can be used by constitution and by law and things like that. Can one of you explain that in simple terms for our viewers who may not be as versed in the legislative process?
It's basically about a third, a third, and a third. So you have a third of the budget, which is known as the general fund that the legislature has access to and can change based on what we need with regard to balancing the budget. About another third is controlled by the federal government and court order that says this must be spent in a particular way by formula or whatever the requirement is. And then another third is controlled basically by the voters through voters' initiatives that they have said that this is off limits to the legislature and it's only to be controlled. Most of that goes to education and healthcare. And there's other programs with First Things First and whatnot. So it's very difficult when you're forced to only deal with a third of the budget to have to balance that budget on the back of that one third of the budget when it would have been much easier to just reduce in small percentages across the entire budget. But we couldn't do that. We are prohibited from going into those other areas.
Back to something Christopher was saying earlier, there's a lot of people who have things to complain about in the budget, but you guys have a tough job to do. Could this have been worse? Did you guys mitigate some of the decisions?
It could have been worse if we'd kicked the can down the road for another year. It would have created a huge cliff. What we're facing now with the elimination of the temporary sales tax is another budget deficit that will come when that tax goes away. If we had not balanced the budget this year and actually begin to generate a surplus to put towards that decline in revenue when that 1 cent sales tax goes away, you would have seen significant budget reductions across the board that I don't even want to think about that would have occurred. So it's, do you rip the Band-Aid off in one fell swoop or do you slowly just tear the Band-Aid off? And I think it's better to just get it over with, get the budget balanced, and then look at finding ways to grow the economy to mitigate the impact of that sales tax going away. And if it doesn't, where that economy isn't there, at least have money in reserve, which we will through a surplus over the next couple of years to put towards that sales tax.
That's a great point, Frank. And because it was a very responsible budget, we can keep this budget now for the next couple of years. So regardless of what part of government you're looking at, you can pretty much count on the current level of spending. And that will start to generate a surplus, which will help us offset the 1 cent sales tax when it goes away in 14. We will have built up enough surplus, hopefully, to carry us through.
So are you saying within reason, 12 months out, that the budget we see for the 11-12 fiscal year is most likely, with maybe some minor tweaks, the budget for 12-13?
Yeah, there's some spending formula requirements that the legislature has to fulfill, so we'll have to adjust for those formulas and then offset that mandated increase on those formulas with some reductions possibly somewhere else. But at the same time, we're seeing revenue start to come back. So as revenue comes back, that also enables us to be more flexible. Like Senator Melvin says, this budget, if we hold tight on this budget and not increase spending, we can then take it in the next fiscal years, which helps a lot of the jurisdictions that are affected by that budget, school boards, county, city governments, because they know exactly the amount of revenue that's going to be there. And I think that's going to help a lot, because one of the biggest problems is not knowing what your budget's going to be. And that I think will be alleviating some of that concern if we stick with this budget over the next few years.
To listen to more than 30 minutes of discussion with Senators Antinori and Melvin on the budget, you can go to our website, azpm.org. We'll also hear more from the two GOP lawmakers throughout our look at the state's spending plan. Let's now turn to some of those agencies and people hit by the budget cuts. At the University of Arizona, tuition is at record levels, and state funding is getting cut 22%. University of Arizona President Robert Shelton says classes will be larger, and students are taking more credit hours to get through their degree programs quickly. Wanda Howell is chair of the U of A Faculty Senate.
Unfortunately, in the last few years, We have laid off 600 plus people. We have consolidated programs. We have reduced the number of total faculty. We, of course, have preserved the quality as much as possible. But the frightening thing is you can't do that forever. It's the way we purchase goods and services for our families. You get what you pay for. And so ultimately, the state will have to decide essentially how important quality higher education is.
Howell says the university experimented with ways to get more students into classes with fewer teachers, and some of the new class formats worked surprisingly well for the faculty. The models include holding classes in the performing arts venue, Centennial Hall, and offering hybrid courses, which are taught partly in the classroom and partly online.
We're getting very sophisticated at how we offer different options to facilitate students graduating when they should, students being able to get the classes they need. In some ways, I think we've even gotten better at that than we were 10 years ago.
Senator Antinori says the university needs to specialize rather than cut.
What I see, in my opinion, with regard to the universities is, just like in business, you can't, you know, be a jack of all trades and expect to be the best in all of that. I think the University of Arizona is positioned well to specialize. I think its undergraduate degree program should be in science, engineering, and in the healthcare profession. It cannot provide an undergraduate degree for everybody. I think we have other mechanisms in the state, community colleges that are looking at four-year degrees. We have private universities of four-year degrees. If Southern Arizona and the University of Arizona wants to be a premier research, engineering, and science university, it needs to become that. And it needs to have its admission standards reflect that. And I think if you allow a sort of a cutoff, a bar, so that you get the best students coming into the state that know that it's not easy to get into the University of Arizona. It's almost like a public university, Stanford, let's say, and the bar is there. You will get a higher quality student.
The funding question hits home in the classroom for younger students, too. In the Amphitheater School District, Sandy Schiffman, a fourth grade teacher at Keeling Elementary School, says she gets about $150 to stock her classroom this fall. That's down from $200 when she started teaching about 14 years ago.
And with that, we have to buy printer ink for the cartridges and pencils and crayons and papers and construction paper and stuff like that. So it has always been my habit, my need, that I go to Walmart and wherever and I hit the sales and I buy crayons and colored pencils and markers and glue sticks and scissors and pencil boxes and Kleenex and sanitizer, anything I need for my classroom.
At a school where many families can't afford school supplies, Schiffman spends close to $2,000 a year out of pocket to ensure her students have what they need, because $150 isn't enough.
My mom asked me that question. She goes, what would happen if you didn't buy it? I'm like, well, they would do without it, and then I wouldn't feel as organized that I'm giving them as a clean of a workspace or, you know, and teach them organizational skills and all that. So I don't know if all the teachers spend $1,800 a year. I know a lot of them spend $300 to $500 to up to $1,000 on their classroom. And what happens if we would all say no? I don't know. I can't do that to my kids. I can't.
At Keeling, Schiffman says field trips were eliminated because there's no longer any money for the buses. The school can't afford to keep its computer teacher, so now it's up to her to teach those skills. But three of the four student computers in her classroom are 12 years old. That's older than the fourth grader she's teaching. Art, music, and physical education courses haven't been eliminated, but they have been cut back. Senator Melvin says the state spends about $9,000 per student. Senator Antinori says the state's school funding formula doesn't work, and the money needs to be redirected toward effective classrooms and teachers.
But if you look at the student performance in the Vail School District is significantly higher than the student performance in the Tucson Unified School District, yet TUSD spends $2,000 more per child than the Vail School District. So you can see it's not about money. I mean, there's a lot that goes into education. We've got to reform education, I believe, from top to bottom, create incentives in there for teachers, which the teachers' unions are adamantly opposed for. They don't want pay for performance. We want to get good teachers. Good teachers deserve great pay.
But Schiffman says money in the classroom does matter because students need to learn more than just the basics.
You want, at least I think you would want, a well-rounded individual. That's our goal. Our goal is to bring up a child so that they are a productive, content member of our society. And if you narrow their focus to just testing or just the material in the test, you don't get a well-rounded individual. A well-rounded individual does art, music, PE, some sort of exercise, some sort of outward experience instead of just book learning. There's more to life than just books. As much as I am a reader and I love books, I can't believe I'm saying this, but there's more to life. There's more to experience than just sitting in the classroom. You've got to get out and experience Picasso, and you've got to be able to experience Beethoven, and that's what music and art does. You've got to learn how to exercise and take care of yourself, and that's what PE does. PE talks about eating right and exercising right and learning to take care of yourself. Without that, how can we have well-rounded individuals? It's more than a test.
The pressure is enough to make even a 14-year teacher question whether she can keep this up.
It's difficult jumping through all the hoops and making sure that you're doing everything that they're asking you to do with less and less and less. Sorry, I'm getting teary-eyed. I don't know what I can continue. It's a drain on me physically, emotionally, and financially. But I do it because I love it. I love their smiles. I love the little light bulb that goes ding.
As emotional as the cuts to education at all levels are, some of the other reductions bring out more subdued feelings, but are not felt any less acutely. One of the ways state lawmakers balanced the budget was to shift some costs to cities and counties. At the city level, Tucson Councilman Steve Kozacik says one of the most noticeable cuts was transportation funding.
There are a couple that are just dollars and cents straight up. The LTAF, which is lottery money, and the HERF funds, the Highway User Revenue Funds. Those are both cut by the state. In the last 2 years, the lottery money was cut by about $2.5 million. This year alone, the HERF dollars were cut by about $4 million. Both of those funds are going to compromise our ability to not only maintain the public transit system, but also fix roads around town. So those are the kinds of things that those dollars were earmarked for. So I've been really trying to fight to fix potholes, to fix the roads, and find money in public transit that we could allocate towards that. Those LTAF dollars and those HERF dollars leaving the city is going to make that much more difficult.
Councilman Kozacik says fixing potholes is more than just an aesthetics issue. He says it comes down to safety as people swerve to get around them. He also says everywhere he goes, he hears about road conditions. Kozacik says people are tired of ruining their cars because the city can't afford to fix the roads. Pima County Supervisor Sharon Bronson represents the rural District 3, which spans from Tucson to the western county line and includes Ajo. Like Kozacik, she's upset about the lack of road funding.
We aren't going to be doing any pavement preservation. I mean, we will be filling potholes only on an emergency basis. We won't be doing any chip seal, any slurry seal, any pavement restoration. And the longer we defer this kind of maintenance, the more expensive it gets to fix it. So what the state legislature has done has basically stripped us of the ability to do what our citizens want us to do, and that's to maintain roads.
But Senator Antinori says the complaints about the cuts from local officials are just complaints with no factual basis.
And what a lot of people don't understand is the vehicle license tax, for example, that the state of Arizona charges. A lot of people think the state gets that money. The state gets none of that money. All of that money goes to the jurisdiction in which that vehicle is registered in. And we also have a system of state shared revenue in the state of Arizona. Well, we've seen a revenue decline of 38% and the state's general fund. I don't think you can ask any county or city that they've seen a shared revenue decline of 38%. We've done a lot over the past few years to hold the cities and counties harmless to that decline in state shared revenue. All we asked the counties and the cities to do is chip in and help with the running of the Department of Motor Vehicles that helps collect that tax and collect that HERF money that they use for roads and local services. So that money that they're saying we took from them is actually just chipping in to pay for half of the Department of Motor Vehicle cost of managing the VLT and the HERF program. The state's still paying the other half, and we don't get any of the money. The state gets no VLT. It goes all to the local government. So all we did was say, hey, just chip in and help cover the cost. And we have to because we need to, again, share the burden of the services that the people of the state get.
Transit and transportation aren't the only areas of the city and county budgets hit by changes in the state spending plan. Andrea Kelly will take a look at those issues next.
Welcome back to Arizona Budget 2012, How It Affects You. The impacts to the city and the county are easy to see on the roadway, but Tucson City Councilman Steve Kozacik says some of the other cuts to local governments are more subtle.
They have a bill called SB 1525 that is going to cost the city money to implement. It's what they up in Phoenix love to call an unfunded mandate. We, the city, are going to have to pay fees to developers, reimburse fees to developers, impact fees. We're going to have to hold public hearings and justify land use codes every 5 years, change those codes, reassess them, re-justify them. So that is one that I have a study session agenda item that coming up very soon to ask the city manager and city attorney, what are the hard costs for the city in this bill that they just passed? I will guarantee you that if you get somebody from the state legislature in here and ask them to explain SB 1525, they will fumble around because I will bet you it's a 13-page bill, and I will bet you they don't even know the implications as far as what collateral damage they're causing downstream.
And in the new fiscal year, counties will bear a number of new costs, including a doubling of the contribution they pay for housing of psychiatric patients at the state hospital. Additionally, the counties are being asked to give back nearly $40 million to the state's general fund. With all that in mind, Supervisor Bronson says county departments won't be getting money to do numerous small projects. One example, the Parks Department asked for money to pay for maintenance on two new soccer fields at Rialto Park. Like other requests, this one will go unfunded.
Another department very hard hit with close to $8 million in deferred maintenance issues is our Parks Department. Our trails are not going to be maintained. We look at their budget, it's considerably less than it was in 2008. Again, we're in the same situation we are with roads. We may be able to build the new facilities that were promised when folks passed the bonds, but we can't open them or maintain them.
Despite what Supervisor Bronson and Councilman Kozacik say, Senator Melvin says there's no reason for the bad roads residents constantly complain about. He says municipalities just need to look at the solutions differently.
And I want to appeal to all the listeners in cities and towns, the county. There should be no potholes. There should be no graffiti. There should be no illegal dumps in this state. If government at all levels uses inmate labor at 50 cents an hour to fix those things. So I would encourage those people, pick up the phone and call your local government if you spot a pothole or graffiti. There's a sure way to fix it and very cost effectively.
Just in case this conversation sounds like more partisan politics, it's worth pointing out Councilman Kozacik is a Republican. He's the only one other than the mayor on the Tucson City Council and says that's why he has led the city's charge against the state budget.
Frankly, one of the reasons that I've been the one doing that is because if anybody else on the council had tried to lead this conversation, they would have just been blown off as partisan politics. Much to their chagrin, they kind of have to pay attention to me, whether they like it or not.
One of the highest-profile cuts in the budget was Access, the state's Medicaid program. But how $500 million will be whittled from that budget is still being worked out. However, healthcare in this and other fiscal years has felt the budget knife. Dr. James Dumbald is the medical director at St. Elizabeth's of Hungary in Tucson. He says a loss of mandated funding was a 25% budget cut.
That is the return of tobacco tax funds that were given to community health centers across the state, ours in particular, under a public referendum was to be given to community health centers, but the state, in trying to balance the budget, has taken that back into the general fund. So a $50 million program, or so, roughly, in the state now no longer goes to community health centers taking care of the uninsured. It gets lost in that whole general budget stream.
Not all of the cuts to the healthcare budget were met with overall approval, even amongst majority Republicans. Senator Antonori says one area he was not happy to see fall was funding for the developmentally disabled.
Our budget, when we passed it out of the Senate, had no cuts to developmental disabilities. We did not want to cut DDD, but then the ninth floor came back and said, you don't get to tell us how to manage our departments and how to manage our budgets. You just give us a number. We want this prohibition against cutting DDD removed from the budget. So, you know, part of the compromise was removing that, and, you know, the governor insisted that she control her agencies, and we relented on that so that we can get a negotiation and get a budget out. And we did. We got a budget out earlier than it had ever been out, and we got a balanced budget first one in 5 years.
It will be a few months before we know the full impact of the cuts to Access, Arizona's Medicaid program. We'll bring you coverage on that as the details unfold. As for the rest of the budget, Democrats still deride the spending plan, calling it draconian. Republicans counter, it's responsible and could have been worse.
If there is some good news, tax collections are larger than state lawmakers had projected. That means there is more money, at least for now. However, nobody wants to commit those dollars for fear of another drop in the economy. For Arizona Public Media, I'm Andrea Kelly.
And I'm Christopher Conover. Thanks for joining us.